Welcome back to the Leaders Table. I'm your host, Ricky Villanueva. I'm joined today by Dakota Berry on our podcast. And Dakota is an alumnus of Chick-fil-A's Leadership Development Program and the current operator of St. Charles FSU in St. Charles, Missouri. Dakota, thank you for joining the Leaders Table.
Thanks for having me, Ricky. Really appreciate it. For sure. Being here.
Of course. We're happy to have you and excited to just dive into some great topics and hear your story. And so let's dive right in, and I'd love to hear your story.
Yeah. So I'll kind of give like a high level overview. Sure. So when we talk about Chick-fil-A, I guess my journey technically started back in the late 80s. No, I'm not that old. I know I may look it, but I'm not. My parents met at Chick-fil-A. So they met at Chick-fil-A Valley Hills Mall in Hickory, North Carolina, which is where I'm originally from. So they met there, you know, the whole great story, fell in love, got married, had me. And then in 2007, so about 20 years later, they said, hey, Dakota, you got to get a job. You're 16. You need to have some spending money, some gas money, things like that. And so looking for a job. I played sports in school and was pretty involved in my youth group at church. And so we're somewhere that's flexible with that, but that's still a good place to work. And believe it or not, Chick-fil-A Valley Hills Mall, where my parents met, was hiring and fit
full my circle, criteria. Right?
Full circle, man. And so, like I said, started there in 2007, worked there through high school and college. Went to East Carolina University, got a degree in health and business, and decided, you know, like I think I said this to you guys the other day, like I was a typical teenage kid who said, like, I'm not going to work in fast food my whole life. And for so
I can relate 100%.
As you can see today, didn't really work out. Yeah. That didn't work out very well for me. But went to pursue some other things, realized that what I got my degree in, in like health education a little bit, like that field at that time was downsizing. This is around 2014. Mm-hmm. And so went and did some odds and ends things. But my last semester of college, did an internship at home and worked at a health department. So I worked 8 to 5 at a health department, 5:30 to close at the mall, like 3 or 4 nights a week. And it was a grind, but
stayed busy for sure.
the Lord knew what he was doing, because I met my wife there together. So when we talk about full circle, like my parents met there, I worked there, I met my wife there. And so we went and did separate jobs after that. I tried to pursue something different, and a grand opening store was opening in our hometown in 2015. And my wife, Blair, was like, I want to get back into the Chick-fil-A game. I was like, great. Good for you. Like, go for it. I'll support you in that 100%. And so believe it or not, if my operator's watching this, he could tell for sure. But I'm pretty sure Blair was employee number one, like before he even hired his wife on HR payroll. And so
this was like a grand opening restaurant, right? So like no employees hired. He is coming into it fresh. Your wife is the first employee on payroll, and heard.
Yeah. She messaged him, I think, 3 days after their Facebook page was created. Like, I mean, she was in there.
Yeah, and she was excited to be there, it sounds like.
She was, yeah. So she said, hey, you should come work with me. Like, let's go do it together, like old times. And I was like, I don't think Chick-fil-A is what I want to do. And so some time went on, and they were hiring for a marketing director, which I am – probably honestly still to this day, just not even remotely qualified for. But I was like, hey, that's like a business side. It's not directly related to like in the mix, like making food. And so I interviewed for it with him. I did, I think, 2 or 3 1-hour interviews. And I told y'all this story. We were right across the street from a university. My big pitch was we're going to do a college day, like every Wednesday, buy a large fry, a large drink, get a free chicken sandwich. Yeah. I thought that was really going to draw some students in, things like that. So we go into that first interview and he says, hey, like super excited to meet with you, open to any ideas that you have.
Yeah.
The one idea I don't want to do, and I'm pretty hard set on, is I don't want to do a college day. And, you know, I'm like, gosh, I'm like 23 at the time, 24. Mm-hmm. And I really got to, I think it helped me later on in my LDP and operator interviews, but I really figured out how to wing it right then. And, or so I thought. And, so yeah, did those, spent 2 or 3 hours interview with him. And then he called me after the last interview and said, "Hey, Dakota, listen, don't think you would be a very good marketing director." And I was like, wow, like this guy wasted 3 hours of my time. You knew that within 5 minutes, man. And so, but he said, "Hey, look, like you seem like a sharp guy. You got a Chick-fil-A background. There's a grand opening. So I'm trying to hire 95 employees. And right now your girlfriend at the time, my GM and my front of house director are the only people I have with Chick-fil-A experience.
Yeah.
Like I need some experience. Would you be interested in being a shift leader?" And I was like, "Absolutely not. Yeah. It's just not what I just don't want to do that."
Yeah.
And so he was like, "I understand. I get it." And man, Jason Pope, I don't know if I've said his name yet. Jason Pope was my operator. And so he, persistent is a great word to describe Jason. And so he called me like 2 weeks later and he said, "Look, I'll pay you a couple more dollars an hour than you're making now. I'll let you get some overtime. And in a year, give me a year. If you hate it, we will go together. I'll help you build a resume. Like I'll help you go find what you're really looking for."
Yeah.
And like I tell people all the time, at 23, the money talked. Let's just call it what it is. But like at the same time, this guy had known me for 3 hours, and for him to personally say like, "Hey, I'll go help you find something else." Like that spoke to me a little bit, you know, this guy genuinely cares. Mm-hmm. And so, I agreed and I thought worst case scenario, I'll get to work with my girlfriend for a year, you know? And so grand opened that restaurant, and I'd never done a grand opening or anything like that before. I'm like, man, what a cool experience that was, because you know, my first shift leading, I was a front house shift leader. So my first shift I led, I had 23 people on my shift.
And you said you come from a mall. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I was like, you come from a mall. You maybe have like four people.
So the mall we worked at, we had 24 total team members.
Yeah.
And then when Blair and I used to close together, it was me and her. Like, that was it. It was two people on a shift. And so you started to realize the kind of impact you could have, like 95 employees, that many on each shift, way more guests coming through, you know, a drive through, all that was just super exciting.
Yeah.
And then Jason and our GM at the time, Jeremy, really started pouring into me and showing me like the business side. Like, I'm a numbers guy. I know you and I talked about this a little bit. Like I love numbers and like, trying to fit all that together. And so when they started showing me that, I was like, okay, there's a lot more to this than just like a chicken sandwich with two pickles and a bun. You know, and so I gradually, you know, got promoted a few times and then became our executive director at our restaurant. And then so I did that for 2.5 years. I know we're going to get into this a little later, but like I decided that the owner operator was what I wanted to pursue. Mm-hmm. And Jason took us to a leader launch event. And what that is, it's an event where they just tell you about like what it's the owner operator process.
What's available and what you could do, what path you can kind of grow. Yeah.
Right. So LDP, if you want to go staff and work at corporate, different things like that. And I had never heard of LDP at the time. And so they threw up this statistic of like, hey, if you apply straight out of your restaurant, like 20% of people become operators. And I think honestly, that may even be high. And then they were like, if you do the LDP program, 75 to 80% of those people get selected. And I was like, okay, that's numbers guy. Like that's 100%. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, we looked into it. The biggest holdup for me was like, and without even asking her, like, do I want to travel full time 24/7? Do I want to make Blair live in a hotel away from family? And I remember just like approaching her with it. Like, look, I kind of almost talking her out of it. I think it's a very Chick-fil-A thing to do is to like talk someone out of something to make sure they're committed. And I was like, hey, like we'll travel full time, live in hotels, like, you know, salary, like we get a salary. It's pretty good. And she was like, so on top of that salary, they're like, we have to pay for all the travel. I'm like, hey, you know, like Chick-fil-A does that too. And she's like, I'm confused on like what's
holding you back. You're like, it sounds like you kind of don't want to do this.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, I mean like, it's just like, it's, it's going to be a lot. Like I, yeah. you know, and she was like, Dakota, you know, we're young, newly married, no kids yet. Like if we're ever going to do something like this, yeah. now's the time to do
this
it.
And so,
right. And so applied at the end of 2019, got selected Valentine's Day, 2020.
Nice.
So, you know, super pumped, really excited to start. And then Ricky, I know you were in the program at that time too. Like mm-hmm. the world came to a crashing halt
with
COVID.
For sure.
And so I got delayed 6 months. So I didn't actually end up starting LDP until August 2020. So started August. Mm-hmm. I did 2 years on the dot exactly. So in 2 years, I did 13 assignments okay. in 24 months. And towards the end was in the process, operator application process. Blair, we'd gotten pregnant towards the end mm-hmm. of LDP, and this decided like, hey, this was awesome for us. And I know there's a lot of people who do it, but like for us, like having a newborn in a hotel just didn't sound super fun.
It doesn't sound fun at all.
Right. And we were just talking, you and I were just talking about this too, but like we traveled, we have two dogs. And so we traveled with two like 90 pound dogs. And I was like, two big dogs, a baby, this isn't for us. And so I had connected with an operator during my time in the program.
Mm-hmm.
We had decided kind of that we wanted to be in the Midwest. And so like who's someone that we align with, but mm-hmm. also like shows Chick-fil-A that this country kid with a country accent is committed to being in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And so Dave Balza in Greendale, Wisconsin, so right outside Milwaukee,
yeah.
You know, we came together and I went to be his managing partner mm-hmm. once I exited. It gave Blair and I and Jude, our son, some stability for a while,
yeah.
But also it gave me somewhere to like continue to hone my skills mm-hmm. and also like have someone advocating for me with selection as yeah. we went through that process. And so I was there, we were there 9 months in Milwaukee. Loved my time there. Also made me realize that Wisconsin was not where we wanted to be long-term.
yeah.
so we ended up, I have a really good friend and from LDP, Cody Pierce, mm-hmm. who I did a couple assignments with in the program. And we were connecting one day and he was like, hey dude, like, I know you want to be in the Midwest. Have you ever thought about St. Louis, Missouri? I was like, man, to be honest, like I've never even been to St. Louis. Like I don't.
Yeah.
And Cody and I are very similar, like have the same values and things like that. So he was like, listen, if something ever pops up, you should
go for
try
it.
To come. Yeah. You should go for it. You should try to come to St. Louis. So we, Blair and I and Jude, we went down there and visited Cody and his wife, Jenica. Really liked the area, like felt like mm-hmm. it was somewhere we could be. And, believe it or not, this is how the Lord orchestrates things. Something in St. Louis popped up like the next week. And
nice.
So
yeah.
Applied for that, didn't get it. But when I got that call back, mm-hmm. he was like, hey, there's two stores coming available in St. Louis. We liked you a lot, just didn't think you were the best person for that restaurant. Think you could be a better fit for these. So interviewed for those. Very fortunate and blessed to be. I was selected for St. Charles. And so selected for St. Charles in March of 23 and took over August 1st of 23.
Nice.
And so been there since. We're going on
like a year and a half, right?
Yeah, year and a half. Like I said, been married to Blair. Blair and I have been together almost 11 years total. About 6.5 years married. We have a 2.5-year-old Jude. And then, Ricky, you know that we just talked about this. she's 38 and a half weeks pregnant with number two, boy number two.
Yes, sir. So, congratulations.
Yeah. Super excited to do this podcast. Also mm-hmm. super hoping I don't get a text or
a call in the middle of this.
Hey, I'm in labor, but,
yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of a long story, but that's kind of my story.
No. Awesome. I definitely appreciate you sharing and it'll kind of set up some of the questions that we'll have and give context as well. I think the one thing that I've realized over the last couple of podcast recordings that we've done is sometimes people are listening in and they probably have no idea what we're talking about. We're over here. It's like, oh yeah, here in LDP, I was an IM, I was a GOS and I was in this coop and I was doing all this and that. And someone listening may be like, what is going on? Like, I have no idea what they're talking about. So definitely appreciate that background and just kind of walk you through that process, because like I said, it'll help give some context. Before I dive into the question, I just want to address one thing, because I completely forgot to even just address it earlier on. I think I was just so focused of making sure the intro was great. But so Chris is not joining us today. Chris is actually sick. We were definitely excited to have Chris on today. But he just wasn't feeling good and said, "Hey, Ricky, fly solo like you did with Emily on the last recording." And so that's where we're at today. So just want to address that. Chris is still well and a part of this podcast. He just unfortunately was not able to join us today. But with that said, Dakota, I want to dive in to my first question that I have for you. When we sat down and talked and really heard the full story, there were some like truly pivotal moments in your childhood and maybe early adulthood that really shaped who you are, who you are as a person and who you are as a leader, along with maybe, we didn't really get into this per se, but like your purpose in life. And so I'd love if you would just share some of maybe one or two of those pivotal moments. You can kind of think back to shape who you are today.
Yeah. So I think, and we kind of talked about this, there was three big moments in my during high school for me that like really shaped and set me on a certain trajectory. And so kind of a small backstory, growing up, my dad was a North Carolina State Highway Patrolman. Mm-hmm. And so, we moved around a couple times when I was a kid, different like duty stations essentially.
Yeah.
And the summer before my eighth grade year, we were living about 45 minutes from our hometown. He got offered a spot, as a sergeant in our hometown, essentially.
Nice. Yeah.
And so, we moved back, we were moving back, and my parents decided like, "Hey, we want to build a house. Like we're at a point, like we feel like we can do that. Let's build a house that we can pick everything."
Yeah.
And as most people probably know, like that's not like this, like that doesn't happen like overnight. Like that's a pretty long process. And so, at the time my grandmother had just been diagnosed with breast cancer, my dad's mom. And so my parents decided instead of going and like renting an apartment for a year, trying to find somewhere to rent, let's go live with them, pay them rent. And essentially like, we're just going to help them out like financially, but also like take some pressure off my grandfather. Like he can help with my grandma and different things like that. So, it's kind of funny thinking back. Like I don't think about it often, but when I do things like this and have to, you know, and I tell the story, it's pretty wild. Like we lived in a basement, for that year. I mean, eighth grade, I was 13.
Yeah.
This is, you know, you're going through a lot of things as a teenager. You're trying to figure 100%. Stuff out. And
you're unsure of yourself for the most part.
We lived in probably a 20 by 10 room, all four of us.
Oh, wow.
And so my parents slept on a pull-out couch. And I wouldn't call it an air mattress. I don't even know what, like a fold-out thing. My brother had one. I have a younger brother who's 3 years younger than me and myself. And we slept on one of those at the foot of their bed. And so essentially sleeping, you know, like in the floor and man, like looking back, just like, I wouldn't trade that year. You know, we lived there a year. Like I wouldn't trade that year for anything. Because one, it brought me closer to my family, it brought me closer to my grandparents. I know Chris has talked about this a lot recently, but like that was my truly first interaction to like grit of grit, determination and fight, like watching my grandmother go through that battle. And so, that was a year and, you know, like I said, as a teenager, like being able to see that, draw closer to her, but also seeing her fight. And then, we moved out, the summer before my freshman year of high school. So here I am going to start a high school. I went to a 5A high school in North Carolina. So like it was a big high school.
You know,
a lot's happening. And so about a month into school, so in September of that year, my grandmother actually passed away. And so like dealing with that, like we had gotten so close, you know, as a teenager, seeing how tough she was, like, I think in the back of my mind, I knew the time was coming, but like also thought, man, she's so tough. She's going to beat this. And you know, my dad, like I said, he's a highway patrolman, tough guy, like military haircut. Like, I don't think I'd ever saw him cry in my life. And at her funeral, like, he cried in my arms. And so, like, that just, you know, that, like, starts some things.
For sure.
And you're like, and I'm a freshman, and I'm trying to figure out how to do school. And, you know, it's not as, you know, in high school, they're not holding. Each step you take, they're not holding your hand as much. And so trying to figure out. So, like, transitioning to high school is a little bit difficult. But, you know, I still have a piece of her. Always with me. I know I was watching Roro Ortega, who's I think one of your previous episodes. He's the man, one of my guys. he was talking about how his mother passed away and how like every day
she's with him every day.
And so that's how my grandmother is. So her name was Judy. Judy Berry. And so like we named my son's name is Jude. And so like we named her after her kind of in a way. Anyway, so got through that. Like I said, always she's always with me. And then in March of my freshman year is where that grit that I learned from her started to like, how do I use it in my own life?
For sure.
I got diagnosed with melanoma, skin cancer in my knee. Excuse me. So had to have like, never had to go through chemo or radiation or anything like that, but I had to have like a pretty extensive knee surgery. And so,
I had this like, is all like within, this is like within a year of each other, right? Or like within 6 months of, within, oh my, yeah, 6 months, even sooner. Yeah, like, oh, wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, like I had a full leg cast. And so you and I talked about this. We share a passion for golf. And so, I had just made my high school golf team.
Nice.
Which not saying a lot, I wasn't very good. But you know, like that was a big moment. Like I made my high school golf team. And so, and then like a couple weeks later, I found this out, had to have this. I was in a wheelchair for a month and like talk about high school, you know, like being in a wheelchair isn't cool. Like being have to be pushed, being pushed around is not cool. But like that's where the grit came in, you know, of like, all right, like I'm 14, but I'm not going to let this, like, I'm going to be
down or, like, this is not going to be a moment where I just kind of throw my hands up in the air, right? Like you said, that grit kind of comes in and you're just like, hey, I've got to push through this. And I think, like you said, like, you're like being there for your grandmother, seeing how tough she was, seeing that she was, she was pushing through all the time. Doesn't matter what anyone else had said. Like you said, kind of brings in that grit to yourself and sounds like it shaped you a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Not a little bit. Sorry, shaped you a lot, to be honest. But
in
that moment, right? Like I think, tell me if I'm wrong here. I know when I was in high school or I look back and I'm like, oh, okay, that time wasn't, I don't know, like wasn't that crazy or influential. Mm-hmm. And then years go by and you look back and you're like, man, that influenced who I am over the last 10 years, 15 years. It's crazy to think about that. But anyway, sorry, just thinking through that. Yep. And like you said, being in high school, I know everyone's experience is normally a little bit different, but like you said, having to do all that in high school is tough for 100%. But anyways, back to you. I'm sorry.
No, that was great. That's a great call out. So got through that. And like you said, like high school is totally different for everybody. Yeah. Like, for the most part, like I genuinely had a good high school experience. Mm-hmm. Like I had great friends. A lot of them I still talk to today from high school. And so my senior year, somehow the wheelchair kid from freshman year, got voted senior class president. And I was senior class president my senior year, which is so funny because I think if you ask any of my family, and I don't know, this might come up again later, but before I worked at Chick-fil-A, so like when I started at 16, before that, my mom's going to love this if she watches this, but I wouldn't ask for a refill, like out to eat, like until I was like started to work. I was so shy.
Yeah.
Like They'd come to the table and be like, "You need anything else?" And I would literally look at my parents and be like,
"And be like, hey, can you ask for the refill for me?"
I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, please. I need more Dr. Pepper. Can you ask?" Yeah. And so, like, senior class president, like, mm-hmm. at the time was like, if you'd have known me 3 years before, you'd be like, "What are you talking about?" But yeah. So my brother, 3 years younger, mm-hmm. was actually freshman class president. He is, that makes a lot more sense. He's yeah. a lot more of the outgoing one. but anyways, senior year, we had a student government lock-in, second semester of my senior year. So like the whole student council got together, kind of like a team bonding. We stayed overnight in the school. I would say we slept in sleeping bags. Nobody slept. We were up all night, you know, like doing different things. We were all teenagers. And so my brother and I get home, and my mom's in the living room, just bawling her eyes out. And, you know, we're like, "Hey, what's wrong?" I'm the kind of person, my wife will laugh at this when she sees this. My mind in any situation, unfortunately, goes to the like absolute worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, if I go there and it's not that, then it's not that bad.
Yeah.
But
I know exactly what you mean. I do the same exact thing where I'm just like, "All right, I'm going to think of the worst and hopefully it's not as bad as it is." And so that it kind of
right.
eliminates a little bit of the sting. I can definitely right. tell you, like you said, like your wife laughs at that. Like my wife will always tell me, she's like, "You're always thinking of the worst thing." But anyway, it's hard. Yeah.
So my dad, obviously in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So put two and two together, you know where my head goes. Yep. But she said, you know, once we got her to calm down enough, she said, "Listen, your dad decided to leave." And, you know, you're 17, my brother's 14. You're like, yep. "What is that? Like, what do you mean he decided to leave?" Mm-hmm. Like, he decided he wants to start over. And, so, you know, I grew up I tell people all the time, like, I had the American dream childhood. Like, I had two parents. My dad worked a lot. He was really invested in work and wasn't mm-hmm. necessarily around a lot, but like, yeah. I felt like at the time, like I knew he loved me and I knew my mom loved me. And, mm-hmm. my mom was there for me a lot when we were younger. And I don't want to say I looked down at people mm-hmm. who like came from broken homes or anything like that, yeah. but I always had this in my mindset, like, how lucky am I? Like, that's never going to be me. Mm-hmm. And so dad decided to start over. We didn't talk a lot, you know, like he chose yeah. like to completely start over. And so, you know, at 17, here I am like trying to become an adult and,
yeah.
you know, like become the man of the house at the same time, like be a role model for my brother, be there for my mom. And so, yeah, like, that set me on a path. That was probably the defining moment in my life. Mm-hmm. I tell people all the time. That moment, there's two paths, two options you take.
Yeah.
And it's, I'm going to use this as like an excuse of, mm-hmm. Things didn't work out. Well, you know, like I didn't have my dad left. Like I didn't have a fatherly yeah. influence. Or like, and I'm a competitive person. Mm-hmm. I grew up in sports. So like, or... I'm going to show you,
yeah.
like, I'm going to do this in spite of you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to become better. I'm going to use this as a springboard to become yeah. better. And that was the path I chose to try to take, was like, mm-hmm. All right. You know, you want to start over because you didn't yeah. think we were good enough. Like, I'm going to show you. And so, like I said, those three things ultimately culminating with that my senior year are mm-hmm. kind of those three things in early adulthood that like, shaped me
for sure.
And so yeah,
no obviously, like, thank you for sharing. I think we can all look back and see our middle school or high school years, and there's, you know, things that shaped us, and I can definitely tell you, like, everything that we've talked about off camera and learning your story and then what we've talked about today, man, like, I look back and I'm like, it's like, It kind of felt like you were just like, I don't know. You got hit, you got knocked down, and you're like, "All right, I'm coming back up." And it's like, "Oh, hey, no, here's another punch." And you kind of get, right. you know, get down and you kind of go through that season. Okay. Like, I'm good for a little while. And then, like you said, your senior year, once again, it happens, and you're just like, how many more punches can I take? And I think that's where I look back at it. And I'm Mexican, and my family loves boxing, and I'm my grandfather, all that. Yeah. And I look back, and I was never a boxer, by the way. I just want to make that clear. Like, I was not a fighter. I was not any of that. But my grandfather loved boxing, and I do remember here at times when we would watch it with him, he would say, the thing that I love the most is, you know, these people train and put time and effort in, and they'll take a punch, they'll even fall down, and they'll get back up, and we'll still continue in that fight. And I think that's kind of like what you talked about, how I'm kind of looking at those two, right? It's
right.
You're taking those punches, you may be getting knocked down, but you're still finding the will to get back up and fight through it. And man, like I said, man, just thank you for sharing. I don't even know what else to say besides just like, if I was in your shoes and that time, I don't know what I would do, but I do know I was trying to figure myself out during those years, and
right.
And adding that in would just been, it would just been a lot on my shoulders to bear. So man, glad you're here. Glad that you were able to have that fighter's mentality and push through it all. So for with that, thank you. I don't necessarily want to switch gears here, but I do want maybe to dive a little bit deeper as we kind of talk about family. Family is an integral part of your journey, like you've talked about. Family's impacted you. They continue to impact you to this day. Where, now that you have your own family, right? You've got Blair, you've got Jude, you've got one on the way, right? You don't have to reveal the name right now. You know, you could do that later if you would like.
I would if I knew, dude. I cannot get Blair to settle on something, but yeah.
But as you have that family, right? How is that shaping the way that you lead your new family, I guess is the best, not new family, but like, yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. Like your new family, like this is now the Dakota Berry family who decided to come together with Blair and have this family. Like, how is that shaping you today?
Yeah. You know, I'll just reference it again. The whole situation with my dad, like, this is going to sound super weird. And like when I told Blair this, when we started dating early on, like, I've wanted to be a dad since that moment. Like,
oh wow. Yeah.
Like, I like that was like, all right. I always knew I wanted to be a dad, but like, I was like, all right, I want to learn from this, and I want to be everything that my dad was in the positive way. And I want to be everything that he wasn't in the negative way. And obviously I'm not going to be perfect. All that to say about my dad, like I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up my mom. Like, you know, my dad worked 12-hour shifts, worked 48 hours a week my whole childhood. And my mom played both parts for a long time. And then ultimately, like when he left, was both. We talk about grit. Grit's one of my favorite words. I think if we talk about LDP later, like if you want to do LDP and you don't have grit, you're not going to make it at all.
To
be honest. But the story, I use it a lot in the selection too. When my dad left, like, there was, you know, when they were trying to work out the divorce and stuff like that, there was not a lot of like alimony or child support, like to help my mom. And my mom was a teacher assistant. And so she made $1,100 a month. And so at that
time, my mom did the same thing. So I know exactly what you mean.
Right. And so like she made $1,100 a month with a 17-year-old and a 14-year-old boys. And like I used to joke, or she used to joke all the time. She would buy a box of Wheat Thins, because that was my like go-to snack, at the grocery store on a Tuesday. And by Tuesday night when I went to bed, the box of Wheat Thins was gone. I mean, we were going through some food. We were, you know, you're in that stage, like you're growing. And so our house payment was $1,200. So my mom made $1,100.
Yeah.
And our house payment was $1,200.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the biggest part of that story, and she's never gone into detail. I want to say I don't know how she did it, but I know how she did it. It's because my mom believes in the Lord about as hard as anybody can. And so like, that's how we got through. But my mom sold that house 6 months ago. And so how she made it through that season of, like, you know, I went to school, like, we were trying to pay for school, and, like, I mean, we didn't even have enough money to cover the house payment. And, like, my mom did what she had to do, and she grinded, and, you know, she showed that grit that I talked about. And so, like, I learned a lot from that, and I learned a lot from, like, how much my mom loves me, you know, like, how much she showed that. And so, like, now, you know, to reference Emily's podcast, she talked a lot about, like, my purpose is not Chick-fil-A. Like, I look at it differently. Oh, like, I agree with what she said. I look at it in the sense of, like, Chick-fil-A is not my identity. Like, if I had to rank Chick-fil-A right now, it would maybe crack my top five. You know, but, like, I'm a Christian first. Like, I would not be here without the Lord. And then secondly, I'm a husband. And then, you know, thirdly, I'm a father. And, like, you talk about purpose and different things like that and how it shapes it. Like, I start every day by getting Jude out of the bed. Like, that's my, like, thing is I go and I pick him up and I get him out of bed and everything like that. Like, for me, it's really easy because I have that constant reminder every day. And I have the reminder of the chip on my shoulder, I guess, if you want to call it, of, like, be better. Like, it sounds, I guess, more negative than it needs to be, but, like, I wake up every day and I'm like, be better than your dad was today. And, you know, be who Blair and Jude need you to be and the new baby. And, like, my thing is too, is, like, you know, a lot of people ask me, did I want to change my last name when all that happened? Cause my mom remarried. I don't want anyone to argue with me when I say this. I have the greatest stepdad in the world. like he filled a lot of those shoes. And, you know, he was the best man in our wedding. Like, he's amazing. And so I could have taken his last name. But I always think about Truett's, like, life verse of, like, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. And it's another big reason why I didn't necessarily want to go back home to be an operator. That's why I wanted to go start somewhere new, is, like, to be honest, a little bit, I didn't want to be known as, like, oh, you're Dean Barry's son, you know, like, you know, like, you kind of get the head tilt and the, like, I want to go somewhere and I don't even want to be Dakota Berry necessarily. Like, one day I want to be like, oh, you're Jude Berry's dad. Like, that's the greatest thing anyone could ever tell me, you know? And so, like, I just want to be the best version of that wherever I'm at. Like, if I'm at work, I want to be the best, you know, be the best operator I can be. And then when I'm at home, you know, I have a really great team. Like, I'm going to let them do it. I'm here if you need me. But, like, I want to be the best husband and dad I can be as well. And so, that's kind of how that all intertwines for me.
No, for sure. Well, awesome. Well, thank you for sharing. I know, like you said, everything you've talked about, I know it's not easy to share. So just thank you for sharing. And, and just kind of walking us through kind of that journey, like you talked about, of, like, hey, you know, the way it shapes it is, like you said, I want someone to be able to say, oh, you're Jude Berry's dad. Right. And I think, maybe not, I think, but, like, I know that's how my dad feels, right? Like, my dad feels that same way where he's like, oh, hey, you know, that's Ricky or Mark's or Zach's dad. And I love that he has that reminder. And I will say, like, my family, I've had both my parents all the way through and had a great childhood, and my parents grinded and they had grit and had all of those things. And I can resonate though with what you said, where it's like, my dad was more focused on others being able to say, oh, hey, you're Ricky's dad, Zach's, you know, their dad, versus like, oh, you're Ricardo Villanueva, right? Just because that was his goal in life, was to provide the best life for our family. And so, just appreciate you sharing and all that. I'm gonna switch gears a little bit here today, though. On this next one here. We haven't really dived into it yet, but you had talked to us about impacting people, kind of how you chose to be an operator, I won't give too much, but I do know it was in Oklahoma that you told us. Yeah. There's a moment that stood out to us, right? I won't say what part of Oklahoma. I'll let you add that in. But if you don't mind sharing, what was that story and how did that shape your drive to become an operator?
Yeah, so, you know, and Ricky, I know you've heard this too, of like they say – I had an email and I couldn't find it this morning because I was going to give the exact statistic, but I think it was in 2022, like 120,000 people or something applied to be an operator. Mm-hmm. And it was like 100 or less got selected. Yeah. And that acceptance, if you want to call it that, percentage is like lower. Like you have a better chance of getting into Harvard.
Harvard
tagline. That everybody always gives. So I'm like, you know, like you hear that and you're like, all right, Mark, I'm not that special. Like I'm not that person. And my operator, Jason Pope, he came to me one day. This was after I became executive director. Mm-hmm. And he was like, my thought was I'll just be executive director. Like, I love this gig. I love my team. Like, I love what I'm doing every day. Like, worst case, I'll just do this forever or until Jason makes me leave. And he's like, have you ever thought about being an operator? And I'm like, I mean, thought about it? Sure. But like, Jason, like, I can't. This isn't, you know, like Jason always talked about, like back in the day, it was like a handshake agreement or like if you knew Truett, you had a good chance. And it's like, it's not like that anymore, you know? And so
it's very different.
You know, I don't know if I have what it takes. And he was like, well, I think you should think about it. I think you do. And so like, I gave it some thought, you know, again, like I think there was still a part of me that was like, do I want to do this for it? Like, do I want to do Chick-fil-A? Do I want to work in food forever? And so this was right after the leader launch event. He was like, hey, go be a trainer on a grand opening. It'll expose you to something outside of Hickory, North Carolina, as far as Chick-fil-A. There'll be some LDPers there. You'll get a chance to talk to them and see what it's like. So, man, I applied for like 5 or 6 grand openings. And to be honest, like, I tried to apply for ones in cool places, San Diego, Orlando, you know, like different things like that. But I'd never been a trainer before. So like that initial, it's hard to get in, I guess, initially. Yeah. And it's so great how the Lord aligns things. But Chris McGalliard, who's an operator, shout out McGee if he watches this. first time he was a new participant, first time GOS. Yeah. And so like, I got lucky. He didn't necessarily have trainers.
Yeah. I got you out. And
And so he's like, hey, do you want to come out? Norman, Oklahoma. So home of the Sooners.
I've got to throw this. You can't see it, but I got to say Hook 'em Horns.
I have no preference either way. Norman was good to me, but you know, I went out there with, I told you all this. Like, I went out there on the mindset, like, just say yes. Just do whatever it takes, learn whatever. And so Chris was awesome. Like, answered any question I have, really like tried to be that like sounding board and, you know, person for me. And then one night, it was closing time and he said, hey, I need you to go teach this kid how to do a parking lot sweep.
Yeah.
And I know I said, I'd say yes to anything. And I like to think I'm decently humble, but that was a piece of humble pie for me. Cause in my head, I'm thinking like, dude, I am the executive director of a restaurant.
For sure.
I run a I am like, if this is what it was like, I'm the vice president and he's the, like, I am one heartbeat away from running this restaurant and you want me to do a parking lot sweep.
Yeah.
And again, the Lord humbles you, but also the Lord knows what's going on. And so I take this kid out there and we're sweeping trash out of the drive-through lanes. I'm just, you know, trying to connect with him. Like, hey man, like why Chick-fil-A? Like, you know, there's a bunch of other places you could work. Why Chick-fil-A? And he said, you know, like, some things are tough at home right now. And, my mom's struggling a little bit and like, I want to be able to help contribute. Like, I want a job that I can help contribute. I was like, wow, that's really cool, man. Like, if you feel comfortable sharing, like what's going on at home? And he said, my dad just left. And it was one of those, like, you know, yeah. like your heart, my heart kind of stopped.
Yeah.
Also, like, I'm not necessarily, my wife would say I'm not at all, but like, I'm not normally an emotional person.
Yeah.
And here I am like, all right, dude. And internally, I'm like, all right, man, like, you cannot, don't start crying in front of the 16-year-old kid yeah. in the dark in Norman, Oklahoma. Yeah. But like, I was able to share my story with him of like, well, hey, I know this is hard to believe, but so did mine. You know, like, so my dad left too. And yeah. like, and he was like, your dad left and like, you're a corporate trainer now. And I'm like, yeah, like, yes. Like yeah. it gave me that opportunity to say like the whole two pass thing, like, mm-hmm. dude, use this, like use this mm-hmm. to show the world how great you can be in spite of that. And yeah. it was in that moment. Like, I don't even know that I've, you're one of the few people, and I guess everybody who listens to this, like, I've never really told that story, but yeah. like, that was the yes moment for me of like, all right, there's one I impacted. Mm-hmm. If I didn't impact anybody else here, there's my one. And like, what if I could do that with my own team of 100?
Yeah.
And we're doing 1600 plus transactions a day. Like, how many opportunities could I have as an operator yeah, to impact do that? People. And so, that was it for me then. And, I went and did a couple more openings with Chris mm-hmm. and kind of had the same thing, like saw some different things and saw that like, everybody, you know, my team thinks it was, every life has a story. If you've worked at Chick-fil-A, you know that video.
Yeah.
It is my favorite video ever because it's so true. Like you know, you have the girl in that video whose dad or whose mom passed away and the dad blames mm-hmm. her. But then you also have like the girl who's like grinded through high school
yeah.
to pay for college and she achieves that and goes to college of her dreams. And like everybody's got something positive or negative. Mm-hmm. And so to be on that journey with them was something that I was like, yeah. I really want to have the opportunity to do this.
Nice. Yeah, that's all. Thank you for sharing. I remember when you told us this, I remember looking back and in the same way, like I kind of thought of it. It's like, hey, when's the first time you've had that big serving of a humble pie and kind of having it in your face and understanding that, man, everything happens for a reason and there's a purpose behind yeah everything that happens, right? Like the Lord has a reason for why you were in Norman, Oklahoma, why you're teaching the 16-year-old kid how to do parking lot sweeps. Right. And there's times where it's like, I don't want to do it. I just don't. And it's like, if you were to tie like a story, it's like Jonah in the well, right? You know, God telling him, hey, go do this. And you're like, I don't want to. And you could have made that choice to either go or mm-hmm. not. Right.
Right.
But yeah, it's a very, what's the best way to put it? It's a story that I think a lot of people can resonate with and a great reminder. That's probably the best way to put it. It's a great reminder.
Right.
I think a lot of times there are things that happen in our lives that are humbling, that kind of give you a grounding. Mm-hmm. And there's times where I think that grounding, you forget about it. Like, right. It's, you have to be intentional. And I think right. there's those times where it's kind of like, you know, God telling you, hey, you forgot about this? Like, let's give you another little slice
yeah.
of this humble pie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I even look back and I went, we didn't talk about this in our off conversation or off camera conversation, but I went and right. helped open a Chick-fil-A here recently for a buddy of mine, John Traeger in Indiana. And mm-hmm. man, you know, he just said, hey, come in, help us out. I'd love to bring in your backhouse expertise. And you know, we're really in a place where I need leadership and some structure. So come help us. Are you available? And I said, oh, 100%, man. Like, I'd love to come out and help. And man, that was a humble pie, 100%. When I think it was day two, there's three of us closing the restaurant and I'm back there, you know, doing dishes for 4.5 hours straight and just going, wow, what did I do to deserve this? You know, you kind of have that thought just for a second. And I remember looking right. back and I'm like, you know, I should be thankful for this opportunity. There is a, let me leverage this opportunity, not leverage because that sounds like you're only doing it for this, but let me utilize this opportunity to really impact people and help them as much as possible. And I just remember doing dishes for 4 hours. I think it was probably longer than that. After I closed my station, went to the back, was doing dishes. And I'll be honest with you, I don't really do dishes even at home, but I remember just saying, like, you know what, I'm going to do this. And just getting to know the team, hearing their story, being able to tell them, hey, guys, like, I'm not saying that y'all want to be with Chick-fil-A for the rest of your lives, and I'm not saying that you want to be an operator or work at corporate or any of that, but what is it that I can help you and remind you in, or just helping you in your journey become the best version of yourself? And as much as, like, my back hurts and as much as my hands are all cut up and crazy, it's like, I had a great time.
Yeah.
I truly had a great time. And, you know, we were just jamming out to some music, getting to know them and just reminding them and giving them a fresh perspective on life. And that's not me, like, saying that I have all the answers, but just impacting people in a way that most people don't know about, right? Like,
oh,
appreciation for the team, appreciation for everything that goes into it. I think the other side of it is people, when they look at, I'm not an operator, right? But when people look at a Chick-fil-A operator, I think a lot of times they're like, oh man, not that it's easy, but it's like, man, you've got it kind of made, right? It's like, man, you it's a sweet gig. You're partnering with a brand that's super strong that people want to partner with all the time. Like you said, it's harder to get into Harvard or to become an operator than it is to get into Harvard. And I think sometimes people forget everything that goes into it, from your personal journey all the way through the impact of people washing dishes to breading chicken, right? It's the other side of it is, I know I go home and my dogs would love my work shoes, right? Because it's got chicken and all the flour, and they're like, oh man, I'm in heaven. But you get home and you smell like a fryer. And I just remember my wife
being always
like, hey, you know, leave those clothes in that hamper and you're going to wash that clothes as soon as you can.
Separate.
Yeah. And I think this is a great segue talking about, like, being an operator, like you said, is rewarding, right? Mm-hmm. But the weight is a little bit different than just being a leader in the restaurant. And I was talking to another operator, I think this was probably last week. I'll put it this way, like, shout out to Georgette in West Virginia. And I remember her saying, like, hey, like, there's just a big weight difference from being a leader in the restaurant to now everything is on you. You own it. And that's not that you don't have people helping you, but, like, the buck stops with you. Right.
Yeah.
So I'd love to hear what was maybe, like, one of those welcome to operator moments that you've had in this year and a half that just made you go, oh yeah, here's a big challenge that I'm facing.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, no, it's she nailed it about, like, it's almost indescribable. Mm-hmm. I remember, I've always been, I don't know if you want to say, like, the people who poured into me were always very, like, results driven.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I'm naturally, like, a relational person, but I'm also very competitive and, like, This is a for-profit business at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And, like, we want to achieve results. And so, but I've always done that. Even in LDP, it wasn't necessarily, like, it was for me, but, like, you know, when you're trying to maximize the fee calculation report in LDP, you know, at the end of the day, whatever that number says at the bottom, you're not, like, taking home as the participant in LDP, you know? And so I remember, like, kind of feeling like, man, this isn't going to be, like, I've done this. Like, I've done this for 2 years in LDP. Like, this isn't going to be any different. And, like, to be honest, this is, like, maybe not the greatest answer, but my first day. So, I took over an existing restaurant. So, I didn't get, like, the dedication dinner or anything like that. Yeah. But I remember I walked up. I got there before we opened. And I just put my hands on the front door and kind of just did my own, like, little, like, I prayed over it, dedicated the restaurant. And, you know, I was like, all right, like, you know, Lord be with me, like, give me strength in all the trials. And, you know, I'm in the Midwest. So it's like the Missouri's in the Midwest. And mm-hmm. for those who don't know, like I grew up in the South. Breakfast at Chick-fil-A is like,
it's popping.
You get kicked in, you get kicked in the teeth most days, yeah. especially on Saturdays. In the Midwest, like there's some days you could take a nap between customers. I mean, it's just not as busy. And I just remember walking in, like seeing one person after another clock in. Mm-hmm. And we had, if you looked at like the whole restaurant front to back, we probably had 16 team members there at one time serving 10 guests an hour. And you're like, and then, it, you know, it kind of hits you of like, all right, like from a financial standpoint, this matters now to like my livelihood.
Yeah.
Like we are these, like we are wasting labor. Like that was one of my, I mean, that was 15 minutes into my first day of like, all right, this, this is like, I'm not just worrying about this and then I'm going to go take home whatever I, you know, like, I'm still making the same amount of money. The like that of like, all right, if I don't run this business well, I don't get paid.
Yeah.
Now, if we do run it well, obviously there's, that's a huge, like I'm abundantly blessed. But that was one of the first ones. And then, I'll tell you, this is kind of a funny story, but it's kind of money related too. But so I took over transition, 100 team members. You kind of interview them all. You know, like I hired most of them back, but like I wanted to at least spend 5 minutes with some of them. And so it got to a point I spent way too much time with the leaders and was like, I was running out of time before we transitioned to talk with everyone. And so I get to this kid and I'm like, hey, this is me. Like very short, like spill. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Like, tell me this, 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 and this. Like, how long have you been here? Where do you go to school? Do you play sports? Like, what's that? And I was like, how often do you work? He's like, I work 2 nights a week because I play football. I'm like, awesome. Like, what's your favorite position? He's like, breading. And I was like, look, I know this was super quick. You're my last one before, like I take over tomorrow.
Yeah.
Any questions you have for me right now? And he goes, yeah, I only have one. I was like, okay, awesome. And he goes, can I get a raise? And I was like, brother, I've known you for 4 minutes. Like, I,
yeah.
I don't, to be honest, I don't even know how much you make yet. Like,
yeah.
I said, you know, like, I need some time to evaluate. But I think it was like those early moments of like, hey, man, they're not. Usually they would bypass me to go to Jason or, you know, they would bypass me to go to Dave. And it's like, you are the person that they're
going to,
they're coming to you now. And, it's just every day. It's like, it's, you know, I walk in the front door and, you know, there's my, which I hate, gosh, I hate. There's a picture of yourself and you're like, all right, like, every single thing, if so-and-so hands out an order wrong, at the end of the day, it's not so-and-so's fault. It's Dakota's fault. And so there is that pressure. It's a good kind of pressure, you know, like there's tons of benefits. And
for sure.
And to be honest, like as a competitive person, like that's what I love about it is that we're not perfect every day. It's the best part about it is the process. And like, being able to try to be perfect every day. But yeah, man, it can be, like you said, humble pie. There's a lot of moments. we had an issue. I'll give one more example. We had an issue where we had some team members upset with one of the leaders. And so they all walked out on a shift. And I told you and Chris this in our like pre-call of like, I've worked for Chick-fil-A now for 17 years.
Yeah.
A lot of it's been front of house. I can hold my own. I feel like about anywhere, but the one place you don't want me is the breading table. And this was on a Saturday.
Yeah.
So our busiest breakfast, busiest day part. And, of course, who was one of the team members that walked out?
Was the breader.
Was the breader.
Yeah.
And so here I am. I think there's a picture of it on my, somebody sent me a took a picture of it. here I am, you know, strapped up in a yellow
apron. We'll have to put that as the thumbnail for the episode.
Me breading, and, you know, it's not, there's not a lot of days necessarily that I have to do that now, but mm-hmm. like at the end of the day, if nobody else shows up, or if something happens and you don't have the people there surrounding you, like it's you, like you do it, like mm-hmm. the risk falls on you. And so, there's moments like that. But I'm extremely blessed to have an amazing team. Mm-hmm. I have an amazing managing partner, Ethan, who holds down the fort.
Nice. And,
yeah. So extremely blessed.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, man, hey, thank you so much for sharing all this great information. Yeah. I've got one kind of last question / free, like I'll call it a free for all just because whatever direction you want. Is there anything that you would love to share that you're like, man, I'm really itching. I want someone out there to know this. You haven't talked about today. Is there anything left? You're like, man, I need to share this, because if I don't, I would be upset with myself not sharing this today.
I think two things. One, I've kind of already talked about. We talked about a lot, but like, one's more for LDP, and then one's mm-hmm. more for operator, like the operator selection process.
Yeah.
I feel like I've seen a lot of participants who want to, like, not all of them. I've just, mm-hmm. like I said, there's a few that like think, all right, I'm going to, like, this is a stepping stone program, which it is 100% a stepping stone mm-hmm. program. But like, soon as they step into LDP, it's about, I get my operator application at 12 months, and it's when do I get my store? And my encouragement in that would be to like stay in the process, like dive into what LDP offers, because as much as it is a stepping stone, if you don't fully embrace it, I'll tell you, the best operators I know, like I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out a few: Josh Carter, Dave Wachter, Carolina Devine, CJ Cook, some of the best operators I know. And a couple of those I just mentioned are rookies of the year.
Nice.
They had the hardest assignments.
Yeah.
Like they had tough assignments in LDP. You're not going to get the stories. You're not going to get the experience that you need at these easy, like if you're coasting. Just my encouragement in that would be just to lean in, embrace the hard. I tell you what, my longest assignment in LDP was at a Cook-Up Front Mall in Tennessee. Like, this isn't the kind of store I'm going to end up getting as an operator. Like, what am I going to learn from this? I use more from my experience there. And then I think Emily Arroyo talked about this as well, but like in the operator selection, somebody told me before an interview that I didn't seem very nervous. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that was a huge compliment, because on the inside, you know, in the inside, you're freaking out.
Yeah.
But it's, I think, like bullets. Right. I think two things that gave me peace were, like, I know that the Lord already has, you know, the Lord has everything planned out already. Like, mm-hmm. he knows how long I'm going to be an operator now. Like, he already knows all that. Yeah. So like, I don't need to stress about it, mm-hmm. but also like, I'm going to be myself. Yeah. I am a country boy from the foothills of North Carolina. And I'd like to think that I pride myself on like who I am on this podcast, mm-hmm. who I am in a few minutes when I go into the restaurant. I'm the exact same person everywhere. Like, you're going to get the same Dakota. And in that process of like, I'm going to be my true authentic self. Mm-hmm. And as much as I want to be an operator and I want Chick-fil-A to want me, I want Chick-fil-A, I want Chick-fil-A to want me, not this buttoned up, like dog and pony show version of Dakota. Like,
yeah.
Cause that's not who they're going to get every day.
For sure.
Like they need to know who they're getting every day. And like, I want them to want that. And, you know, like that gave me peace in my process of like, hey, they say no, like that's not what the Lord wants. And if Chick-fil-A doesn't want me, I don't want Chick-fil-A. Fortunately, for some reason, they did. And I'm very, very grateful for that.
Yeah.
But no, too, like, I think my biggest hope in like sharing like the trials that I went through in high school is, I told y'all this the other day. It's like, I think sometimes operators can be put on a pedestal of like, oh, you know, like they own their own business. They make great money. Like some guys have cool cars, like all that. But like, it's not always sunshine and rainbows. Like there's hard day. There's hard days. There's, I would say it's a lot of times it's more mentally tough than it is physically tough. If you know, if you have people, and I just think, you know, like if you're in a situation where you think I can't do this, like my hope in that, my story is like, I didn't think I could do it either. Like I went through stuff too, and you, but you can do it. Like you can do it. Trust in the Lord, trust in the process, grind it out. And you can get there.
Great last notes, man. Definitely appreciate that. So with that, Dakota, you know, big thank you for joining our podcast today. I'll be honest. I was super excited to talk today and get to know you. And for those that are out there listening, Dakota and I have never actually met until we had our first intro call. We do follow each other on LinkedIn and, you know, we interact with each other's posts and all that. And I will say it's like the one thing I do want to call out that has been amazing with LDP, like you talked about, is the connections that you make, the community that you have. And and part of it, I remember, I'll shout out to Roro. And, you know, one of those days I was down in Del Rio and in restaurant and we were just talking. And I was like, yeah, man, I saw this. I think we could maybe bring some of this to our restaurant here. And, oh, where'd you get it from? I was like, oh, I saw a post from Dakota Berry. And he's like, oh, Dakota, that's my boy.
That's right.
And so,
that's
like, right. So it is, it's great that community that we have and those connections that you make, because man, we could learn so much. And so, like I said, just, I was so excited and just happy that you were able to join us today. For those listening, just thank you for joining us. We hope this episode provides inspiration, encouragement, and also reminds you of that community. Last little plug, shameless plug here is like, please follow, share, like our podcast, The Leaders Table, hosted by Chris Lipscomb and Ricky Villanueva on LinkedIn, Spotify, Amazon Music. And you can also go to rss.com and it'll send you to all these different platforms where you can listen to this podcast and recording. So with that, thank you so much, guys, and we hope you have a great day.